Amen. We're in Matthew, the 8th chapter. Matthew, chapter 8. What does that mean?
Keep reading.
Keep reading. Thank you, brother. Keep reading. All right. Keep reading. That's where we're going to start, Matthew, the 8th chapter. Of course, we're in the Gospel according to John. The Gospel according to Matthew. Katamathion. That's the way all of the Gospels start off. They start off with... turn it down just a little bit. Try to get a little more sound from up here. See, that camera back there has a microphone on it. And I had to put a microphone here so it would pick me up better than it does you. Anyway, every one of the Gospels, there's four Gospels. How many synoptics are there? Synoptics. Synoptos. Synoptos, that's what it comes from. Optimi. Huh? Syn means what? Symphony. That means what? Sound together. Okay? What does synoptic mean? How many of you have an ophthalmologist or an optometrist? All right. What are they? For visions. Okay? And we have the Greek word optos or synoptics. It means three of the Gospels. There are three Gospels that look at things together. There's one that's an oddball, and that's John. John is just different than the other Gospels. He wrote it for a different reason. Brett.
Sorry. Where is that? Is that in here?
Where's what?
Synoptic. Is that in here? Like,
no.
Not translated?
No. 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 Synoptic is a term, a theological term. Matthew, Mark, and Luke are the synoptics. Okay? Matthew, Mark, and Luke are the synoptic Gospels. They look at things together. Okay? If you have a chronological Bible, like this, you go in there and you will look, and they will not... In the New Testament, it will just tell you, it'll have John here, it'll have Matthew over here, it'll have Luke over here, and Mark over here, in the different places. What happened? Because not in each gospel, we have a writer's opinion, of course he's inspired by God, of what was taking place and what was very important to him. Okay? And in Matthew, how does Matthew look at Jesus? How does Matthew look at Jesus? All four Gospels look at Jesus in a certain way. Every one of them.
Genealogy.
Matthew looks at Jesus as the King of Israel. The King of Israel. And that's why it starts right out with a genealogy, all right? Luke has a genealogy also. What does Luke do? How does Luke look at Jesus?
As the Son of
Mankind. All right? And Matthew traces Joseph's lineage because he was the legal heir to the throne of Israel. Herod was not supposed to be on the throne. He wasn't even a son of Israel. He was a son of Esau. Okay? But Luke looks at Jesus as the Son of Man, as actually the Son of Woman. The Son of Woman. Because that... In Luke's Gospel, we have Mary's lineage, not Joseph's lineage. We have Mary's lineage. And then Mary's father adopted Joseph as his son. He adopted Joseph as his son because evidently he didn't have any sons, and Mary was his eldest daughter, so he adopted Joseph as his son. So Jesus was the legal heir to the physical throne of Israel, plus the spiritual heir also, because he was the son of woman. All right? We hear him referred to as the son of mankind because he was really related to his creation. So that's the way Matthew and Luke and all of these look at the different ones. How does John look at Jesus? How does John look at Jesus?
The son of God?
As God. As God. As Jehovah himself. John describes Jesus as Jehovah, the living word of God. And of course, the word Jehovah, they never referred to the name Jehovah, but as the word or the name. Hadabar in Hebrew is the word. And so when John wrote, "In the beginning was the Word," he said, "In the beginning was Jehovah." And Jehovah kept on being an inseparable part of the Godhead because Jehovah kept on being God. And then John 1:14 says, "Kaho logos sarxagenito," and the Jehovah flesh he became. Simple as that. So we have God the Son walking among us. Okay? God the Son walking among us. Now let's go on and look. Now in Matthew the 8th chapter, Jesus is unfolding his messianic credentials to the people that lived around the Sea of Galilee. The Sea of Galilee. There were 9 cities around the Sea of Galilee, and each city had over 15,000 people in it in Jesus' time. Over 15,000. Yes, Brother Brett.
The mountain, are you going to read number 8 right now?
Well, no, I'm in chapter 8, yeah. Yeah, I'll get there. I'm giving you a little background. Okay? And so here at the Sea of Galilee, and right in this area, was the crossroads of the whole Middle Eastern world. Period. Even into the West. Because everybody went through right by the Sea of Galilee. This is what was the highway of the whole trade routes of a whole area. So right there, everybody in the world is like the newspaper, like New York Times or the LA Times or something. Here it is. All the news went out from there. All the way into Egypt, Africa, all the way as far as Britain and the Isles. All right? All the way through Europe and all the way through the East. That's where this is where the trade route was, going right by the Sea of Galilee and these 9 major cities there on the Sea of Galilee. We're going to see a lot of biblical background in here about what Jesus is doing. How many of you ever had a salesman come to your house, vacuum cleaner salesman or something? Used to in the old days, you know. They used to come around. What?
Kirby.
Oh, Kirby was your house the other day?
Yeah.
All right, beating on doors, showing you how they can operate their equipment, how it's better than everybody else's. They used to be the Fuller Brush Man, and then there was the Watkins and all of this stuff. They'd come to your door, and they would show you their wares. Jesus is opening up his sample case of millennial blessings, all right, to all of these people, and he's showing them that he is indeed Jehovah in flesh, that he is the Messiah. And these are his messianic credentials. So here in the 8th chapter is very important. And the Gospel according to Matthew, the Gospel according to Matthew tells Jesus as what? The King of Israel, the Messianic King of Israel. All right? So let's start off here. "And when he had come down from the mountain, great multitudes followed him." All right? Great multitudes. This is thousands now. Great multitudes. This is okloi. I know this is getting into Greek. I teach Greek and Hebrew all the time. But okloos means, that's the term in Greek. That means 5,000 plus. It can be 5 to 10,000 people, okay? 5 to 10K. All right? Okloi, that's this term that we're using here. Now, this term here can mean 10,000 to 30,000 people plus. Okay? 10,000 to 30,000. So that's a lot of people in it. That's bigger than Valley Baptist Church, isn't it? There's 10,000 people come here. That's a big church. Well, I'm going to tell you something. Jesus had a lot bigger assembly there than we have today in this church, even on Easter Sunday or Christmas or whatever. Bigger. All right? Many, many, many. What? This is the people. All of when he fed 5,000 men, it probably was 15,000, maybe 17,000. Because the men had their wives with them and children and all that kind of stuff. So when he said 5,000 men, it was a much more than that. But what we've got here is probably 10 to 30 or 40,000 people. That's a lot of people. They're following him. All right? Now we have a lot of witnesses, don't we? In the Old Testament, it says, by 2 or 3 witnesses, let everything be established. All right? You go over here and you look at the Ark of the Covenant, standing above the Ark of the Covenant. Up there is 2 cherubim or 2 witnesses, being witnessing everything that took place, all the forgiveness of sins. That's why those air cherubims are there. In real life, when we're born into this world, when we're born again, when we die, there are angels witnessing that. When you're saved, there are angels witnessing your salvation. Now, a leper came to him. And all of these people, 40,000 people witnessed this miracle. Now in the Old Testament, was there ever any lepers healed in the Old Testament?
No.
Yes. But they always knew that when a leper was healed, it was a miracle of God. Period. When you had leprosy, you were doomed, absolutely doomed, to die. Even here in Kern County, in the early cowboy days, when somebody was diagnosed with leprosy, you know what they did? What? They went and lived in the graveyard until they died. They camped in the graveyard until they died. Camped in the graveyard until they died. That's what they did. One of these days I'll tell you an old story about a leper up there on Tejon Ranch camping in the graveyard. He was a young boy and got leprosy. They went out and I'll go ahead and tell you. They went out and caught this buzzard. You know, buzzard can eat any dead thing and it doesn't bother him, does it? Oh, they're just putrid-looking creatures. Condors are buzzards. Anyway, they caught maybe a condor or whatever it was. They took a great big pot, they sealed it up, and they put the buzzard with some water in there, and they boiled that buzzard until there was nothing left of him but juice. They took this green-looking vile juice out of there, and this is what they had. These old cowboys said, this is what cures leprosy. So they grabbed this young boy, they went over there, and they came upon him, and they roped him, and they said, we've got this thing that's going to cure you. Well, the kid was fighting and everything else. They grabbed his face, closed his nose, and made him drink all of this broth right down his throat. Then they chased it with the juice of two or three lemons, and then they poured a cup full of sugar in his mouth, held him, and they said his eyes went back in his head, and he just passed out. Later on, they said the boy was up there playing the guitar and everything else, feeling a lot better, and finally they said he went on. They said it cured him, but boy, what a terrible cure. But I doubt it. That was probably an old wives' tale. He probably has had something else. Probably didn't really have leprosy. When you get leprosy, it takes a power of God to heal it. They have leper colonies all over the world, don't they? Still. In the Bible, some leprosy was probably, and some of the boils in the plagues of Egypt was probably staph infection. Did you know that? Probably staph infection. We know how terrible that is today. The plague of boils in Egypt was probably staph infection. Some of the leprosy was cancer, and some of it was staph infection in the Bible.
Very contagious.
What?
Very contagious.
Yeah, some of it was very contagious. Okay. Very contagious. That's why they separated. In Leviticus, the 14th chapter, it tells you all about how to take care of leprosy and how that when somebody was cured, it was considered a absolute miracle of God. And the priest had to declare this person cured. And usually it was by the power of God. Let's go on now. And a leper came to him and bowed down to him saying, Lord, if you are willing. Lord, look at that word Lord there. How did he address him? All right, Lord. What does that mean?
Master. God.
Uh-huh. What? Like a king and Lord. The word in Greek is Kyrios. All right? And it's Kyrie in the vocative case here. And the Greek or the Hebrew term for that is Adonai. And what does Adonai mean, Brother Roger? Come on. What about you guys? Adonai.
King of kings.
King of kings. He addressed him as King of Kings and Master. And this also is the term they infused in the Hebrew Bible for Jehovah, the name Jehovah. So he addressed him as Jehovah, is what he did, the King of Kings. Here we have the book of Matthew looking at Jesus as the King of Kings, all right, as the Messiah King. And so this leper believes in Jesus. First of all, he believes. He's a believer. He knows who he is. And the leper came to him saying and bowed down and saying, Lord, if you are willing, you can make me clean. He said, you have the power. I know that you are God and that you can heal me, because that was the only form of real healing. We got this catching a buzzard up here and boiling a buzzard and drinking the deal and chasing it with lemon juice and then sugar, but this is a real cure. This guy knew that the Lord could cure him. And he stretched out his hand, he touched him, saying, I am willing, be cleansed. And immediately his leprosy was gone, completely gone. Leviticus, the 14th chapter, Leviticus chapter 14. Let's go back there for a moment. Just look at it just a little bit. Leviticus chapter 14. Now I'm going to ad-lib this as you look at it. Verses 1 through 4. And the Lord spoke to Moses, saying, this shall be the law of the leper in the day of his cleansing. All right? Now this is going to tell how that they cleansed a leper and declared a leper cleansed. Okay? Now, they would go and they would check the leprosy, and they'd check him in a week, and they'd come back in another 7 days and make sure that the leprosy was gone. Okay? Then after the leprosy was gone, the man would bring two turtle doves as an offering that God had forgiven him. All right? And he'd bring two turtle doves. How many of you have been out to my house? Some of you have. I've got some turtle doves out there. They would bring two turtle doves. One representing the Lord, and one representing you and all reality. One bird representing the Lord, and one bird representing you. The priest would take a bowl, an earthen bowl of living water. What's living water?
Running
water. Fresh water, like a stream or a spring. It's not dead water. It was not stagnant water in a well or a cistern where you just gather water. This isn't a barrel full of water or a cistern full of water, that this is living, running water. Okay? They would take this living water because Jesus said what? I am the water of life. I am the true water that followed Israel in the wilderness. They had this living water, and they would take this bird, the sacrificed bird, and they would pinch his head off. But they wouldn't take it completely off. They'd leave a little skin on. And they would drain all of his blood in the bowl of living water. They would take and lay that bird to the side because they're going to burn him. And they would take the other bird with a string of hyssop, and they would dip him into the water where the blood was and baptize him in the bowl. And they would take him out of the bowl and turn him loose, and he would fly away. That's us when we're forgiven our sins. By Jesus' death, that bird that stood for. See, every one of these offerings stood for something. So he would take this bird, he would dip it, and they would turn it loose. Now, that's what happened here. Now, Jesus is going to tell this guy to go over there to the priest, because he's going to prove to the priest that he is God. Okay? And he cleansed him. And verse number 4, and Jesus said to him, see that you tell no one, but go show yourself to the what? To the priest. You go back over there to Leviticus 14th chapter, and that's where it is. Okay? And present the offering that Moses prescribed for the testimony to them. I want you to witness to those priests that I am Jehovah. He called him Jehovah, didn't he? He called him Adonai. He called him Lord. Okay? He knew who he was. Verse number 5 now. Verse number 5. And when he had entered Capernaum, what does Capernaum mean? Kapharnaum is what it comes from in Hebrew. Kapharnaum means what? Kafar is what? Yom Kafar. The name, Yom Kafar, what?
Day.
The day of covering. The day of covering, or day of atonement. All right, Kapharnaum means beloved home. Beloved home. That's what it means, Kapharnaum. They love this place. Now, there was a centurion that built a synagogue in Capernaum. He was a proselyte. He was a believer in the Lord. And he built them a synagogue in Capernaum. And in that synagogue in Capernaum, I have been there, and it has Roman, and it has Jewish symbols in it. And this is probably the centurion that built the synagogue.
What was his name?
I can't remember his name right now. Jairus or something. I can't remember what it was. No. But I can't remember his name. He entered into Capernaum, and a centurion came to him, entreating him, begging him, and saying, "Sir, my servant is lying, paralyzed, home, suffering in great pain." And he said to him, "I will come and heal him." But the centurion answered and said, "Lord, I am not qualified. I'm a Gentile. I'm a dog. For you to come underneath my roof. But just say the word, for my servant will be healed. For I too am a man under authority with soldiers under me, and I say to this one, 'Go,' and he goes, and another one, 'Come,' and he comes, and to my slave, 'And do this, and do that,' and he does it." Verse number 10. Now look at this. This man is a great man of authority. All right? "Now when Jesus heard this, he marveled, and he said to those who were following, 'Truly I say to you, that I have not found such faith with anyone in Israel.'" With anyone in Israel. The elite aren't listening. They aren't hearing. They don't want to hear. The elite would try to have him crucified. The elite had already tried to kill him in Nazareth, hadn't they? When Jesus got up in the synagogue, as was his custom all of his life, here he is, 30 years old now. He's been going to this synagogue there for probably at least 25 years, okay? At least 25 years in this synagogue in Nazareth. And he gets up and he does his turn of reading and everything else. He had his bar mitzvah there, everything. That's where Jesus was. They knew who he is. They knew who his father is. They knew who his mother is. They knew what he is all his life. Okay? And he gets up and he reads this part of Isaiah and he said, "This day this is fulfilled in your ears." And what did they try to do to him? Tried to kill him. They accused him of blasphemy. Now, if he wasn't Jehovah, he would have blasphemed. But we know that Jesus is Jehovah. All right? "Truly I say to you, I have not found such great faith with anyone in Israel." Verse number 11 now. "And I say to you that many shall come from the east and west, and lay up." Now, how many of you have a dining room table in your house? Huh? They didn't have any in Jesus' time. They didn't have a dining room table with chairs around it in Jesus' time. In Jesus' time, there was a coffee table. A very short table, about this tall. Okay? Laid out across the floor, wherever the room was. So a lot of times they would go up on top of the house, and on top of the house they would have a dining room. And around this little table, short table, would be blankets and pillows and cushions. All right? And they would lay up to table. They'd lay up. They'd lay down and lay up to this table. Now when Jesus, one time when he was laying up to table, remember when Mary came and washed his feet with her tears? That's because his feet were way back there and his head was up here at the table. And she walked behind him and his feet were laying out. They had the cushions around all sides of this. All right? And they would lay up to table and would reach out there with usually the right hand and get their food. Okay? They would lay like this and reach out and eat, laying down. That's different than today, okay? Laying up the table. All right, here's their feet out here. The woman came and washed his feet like this. You did. Did any of you know this? Yeah, no? You didn't know this? All right. Some of you did. I know. God taught you. Anyway, they're laying up the table. That's what it says. They're laying up the table. It does not say they're sitting at the table. They're laying up the table. So this is the scene here, okay? And they will lay up to the table with Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob in the kingdom of heaven. All right? In the kingdom of heaven. Now, when is this going to be? When is this going to be? What period of time? We're looking back here. This is the God's plan of the ages. This is how things happen. We way back over here. This is Adam over here. And here's Noah lives in this period of time. Here's the flood. Here's human government. Noah's time and how they were scattered. This is when the Tower of Babel, when they built the Tower of Babel. And then this is when God divided the earth and confused the languages. And then we have Abraham right here. We have Moses right here. And here we are right here. But Jesus is looking ahead now through the church age. All right? Over through the tribulation period and into the millennial kingdom. All right? In the millennial kingdom. Actually, the church and all the saved are raptured right here, and they go up and they live in New Jerusalem. New Jerusalem is there today. I mean, it's built today. But it's going to come down on these days and going to rapture them up there. And up here in New Jerusalem, there's going to be some great wedding feasts and so on. So he's looking forward to this period of time now, okay? You got that? I want you to get your Bible timeline chronology straightened out here. All right, he said, and at many shall come from the east and the west and lay up at the table with Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. Evidently, we're going to have chairs in heaven. We're going to be laying up to the table just like they did back then. All right? You can lay down and eat then. A lot of people like to eat in bed anyway, don't they? Breakfast in bed? Well, we'd be having breakfast, lunch, and dinner in bed, okay? And the sons of the kingdom. Look at that. And the sons of the kingdom. Let's look at this for a minute. And the sons of the kingdom. Verse number 12. 8 and 12. What?
Are they talking about
the
kingdom here on earth?
No. This is the kingdom in heaven. All right. We jumped from here to here, or at least here. Okay? All right. Now, God is not very happy with these Jews over there in Israel today. I'm going to tell you something. A lot of people build up all the wonderful things that's happening over there, but God's got to bring the tribulation period upon those people to get them in line. Because they still don't believe in him today. Okay? They still don't believe in him today. Okay, now verse number 12. And the ones, the sons of the Huiu Tes Basileus. Alright? The sons of the kingdom. What does Huios mean? There's a lot of words for son in the Bible, isn't there?
Heir.
Okay, hold on.
Right.
Okay. Children. Napios. All right, Napios. Napios is what? A speechless baby. A little child, but he can't talk yet. Okay? And then what is a Thrapos? Okay, Thrapos. What's a Thrapos? We got a word brief from that. Brief. What's that mean? Newborn. This even can be a child in the womb. Okay? This is a baby. A Thrapos. A little bit tiny, briefly born or incubating baby. Alright? And then we have the word technos. Alright? What's a technos?
Birth.
What?
Birth.
A live birth. Alright? And then we have the word paideo in Greek. Paideo means what?
I don't know that one.
Paideo. Comes from pais. Paideo. What's paideo mean? You ought to know this one. This one's very important. Spare the rod and spoil the child. You know that was an old saying? That means spanking child. That's a child that you teach and you correct. All right? This is a correcting child. This is one that's old enough to get whooping. A whopped. To be whopped, okay? This is one that's old enough to get corrected. They would send them to a pedagogue. Where their master teachers would correct them and make them mind and teach them, okay? That's the paideon. All right, now all these terms in Greek, here we have huios, all right? Or huioi, okay? Because it's plural. Huios means what?
Heir.
This is the heir of the king. Who were the heirs of Abraham at this time? The Jews. Now the heirs of the kingdom, the physical lineage of the kingdom, what's going to happen to those dudes? All right? Let's look at it. But the heirs of the kingdom shall be cast out into what? Outer darkness. Away from the presence of the Lord. In that place there shall be weeping and gnashing of teeth. These are the heirs of the kingdom. Why does he say this about the Jews? Because they will not believe. They will not believe. You know, there's more Jews in hell today per percentage than anybody else. You know why? Because they're stiff-necked, hard-headed people. That's why. A stiff-necked, hard-headed people. Because they will not believe. Today, they will take your money, they will build their temples, they will smile at you and everything, but they still are not going to believe in the Messiah, will they? Why won't they believe in the Messiah? Because they are stiff-necked, hard as flint, it says. And they don't want to believe. That's why. They don't want to believe. The tribulation period will be brought upon them. Yeah, Israel's gathering them back in the promised land. He's gathering back in the land. He's gathering back in the land to pour hot coals of fire on them. He's going to work them over. And then they will believe. And then in the middle of the tribulation period, there's going to be at least 144,000 of them believe. But two-thirds of them are going to be killed. Remember that. Just remember who that is. We have a lot of false teaching out there about Israel today. A lot of false teaching. But the sons of the kingdom shall be cast into outer darkness, and that place there shall be weeping and gnashing of teeth. And Jesus said to the centurion, go your way. Let it be done to you as you have believed. And the servant, and his servant, his slave, was healed that very hour. Now in other places it'll tell you that he was healed. He found out. When was he healed? When was he raised? This very moment when this happened. It wasn't by mistake. And all of this, how many people are here? How many cities around the Sea of Galilee? That is the center, the roadway of the world. How many? 9 cities with over 15,000 plus people in every city. And Capernaum is a real big city. All right? And when Jesus came to Peter's home, Peter lived in what? Where did he live? His oikos, his Capernaum. He lived in Capernaum. I was listening to a set of tapes that I have that I taped over there while I was on an archaeological tour in the Middle East in 1975 and 76. Brother Madden went with me, my teacher, and at that time I hadn't learned how to talk yet. I was 29 years old and still wasn't talking. When I got out among people and things, you know, I wouldn't say a word. I'd get up and preach. Sister Andino knew me back then. I'd get up and preach, but then after that I said nothing. I had nothing else to say. You couldn't pry a word out of me. When I was over there, in those 9 hours of recording, I think there was 10 of my words on there. One of them said, it's on. I said, it's on, it's on, it's on. Another place, Brother Madden hit me like that when the guy says, what? He was looking over there in Hebrew and in Greek, an inscription on Capernaum. He said, anybody knows what he says? And he punches me like that, and I said, Capernaum, Capernaum. And what is it, me? And he punched me like that. Anyway, your servant was healed in that very hour. Now Peter's home here in Capernaum, and he saw his mother-in-law lying. Keep on lying to the point of death with a fever, in bed with a fever, all right? Verse number 14. I'm going back and looking at this in Greek as I go. And saw his mother-in-law, and this is his mother-in-law. By the way, the Catholics have him not married. This is his mother-in-law. For him to have a mother-in-law, he had to be married, didn't he? They have him as their first pope, and of course their popes aren't married. They didn't invent celibacy until 1100 and something. Anyway. How many of you ever heard of St. Patrick? St. Patrick was a Baptist. He wasn't a Catholic. even though they made him a saint many times. And they have him inventing the very first convents and monasteries. He was, St. Patrick was a Baptist. The Catholic Church gave him all kinds of trouble when he went into Ireland as a missionary. He established 365 churches there and baptized over 100,000 people himself by immersion, by the authority of a Baptist church in England where he was a member. And he established deacons and pastors and everything in all these churches. And the Catholic Church was having a fit when Patrick was over there doing that. Now she is stricken with fire. This last week, Marilyn, she got sick. And she had a high fever. And she had pneumonia. And she was just burning up. That's what it is, a high fever. So I got her to the doctor and got all kinds of medicine in her and everything else. And then yesterday, she tried to kill herself. I told her, I said, now, you feel real good today. I said, behave and stay in the house. I go outside, I'm taking care of the animals and everything. I look over there, she's outside fanning around with hardly any clothes on, out there fooling around. I said, get in the house. You're barely getting over this. Next thing I know, I go in the house and she's in there in the bathroom putting color on her hair with all that stinking stuff, you know, with all that ammonia and everything else. And she hadn't had pneumonia. Well, by last night, she's sick again. There's where she is this morning with a fever and sick again. Trying to kill herself. All right. That's how women do, you know. Their looks mean more important to them than life itself. They'll die before they won't look good. Am I right? This put me in the grave. All right. Burned up. All right, she's burning up. Burning up with Piros, fire, fever. All right. Women rather die than go and not fix their hair. And he touched her hand. And he touched her hand. And the fever ran away. And she rose up and began to serve him and wait on him. All right, she got well real fast, and now she is going to be his servant. Okay? Verse number 16. Isn't this beautiful in the original language? You see all these little bitty things in there. You get a little biblical background. When you start looking at the Bible with some background in it, and you look at how the writer is looking at everything, it makes a lot of difference, doesn't it? We could go and we could read in all the synoptics and Gospel of John, we could read how this all goes, tells you what year it was and everything else, but I'm going to go back and study each book, okay? And when evening had come, they brought to him many of who were demon-possessed. Demon-possessed people. And he threw out the spirits with a word, and healed all who were ill. Okay? Many of them were demon-possessed. They were mean people. A lot of bad people in the world, you know what's wrong with them? They're demonic. Demonic. You know, demons give people great power, don't they? They do. In eternity past, way back yonder, way over there before God ever created man, he created spirits, and he created angels, okay? Not a lot of people get spirits and angels mixed up, but spirits are different than angels. Spirits don't have form. They don't have a body, okay? And a fallen spirit is called a daimonia. This is where we get our word demon. And a daimonia means what? How many of you Greek students, you've been around, David, you remember what a daimonia means? What it means? Little God. What it means is a little supernatural being. It's supernatural being. All right, and then angels, we get our word angels as melech in Hebrew. All right, angel means messenger. An angel you can see when they appear to you. Demons don't have form. Angels do have form. Okay, angels have form. Demons do not. Demons seek to inhabit human or animal flesh. There are animals that are demon-possessed. Did you know that? Okay, there are peoples that are demons-possessed. But you're not going to be have an angel possess you. An angel may influence you or whatever. An angel may empower you or whatever. But angels are physical beings. We don't see very much of what's going on around us. We don't have a detector in our body where we can see. There's spirits all in this room, all over the place. Hold on, Bug Bill. Just don't forget it. There are angels in this room. And there are demons. And there are spirits ministering for God in this room. All of this. Okay? When people get convicted of sin, righteousness, and judgment to come, and they want to be saved, and something's pulling them away from God, what do you think that is? That's one of them daimonia spirits. Okay, Brother Bill.
Yeah, let me clarify my head. Sometimes I have a little trouble. A demon is different than an angel.
That's right. Demon is a spirit.
It's a spirit.
It's a fallen spirit.
It's not a fallen angel, but a fallen spirit.
There's fallen angels, what we call fallen angels, and there are fallen spirits. Okay?
Okay. And a demon is created just like an angel.
It's a created being.
Okay.
Everything, all of these are created beings. God created all these way back in eternity before He created anything physical. He created spirits and angels. Okay? Way back in time. And the angel that he put over the physical universe when he created the physical universe was who?
Satan.
Lucifer. Lucifer was a created being. He is not eternal. The devil became the devil. Diabolos means destroyer. All right? He's called Diabolos. He's called Satan. Satan means one who stands against. He's called many things. If you get my book on the doctrines of the Bible, you will tend to go in there and you'll see all the different names and titles of Satan, Abaddon and all of that, what all of these things mean, okay? Satan is a fallen angel, but he is not eternal. From the time that he was created on, he will live forever. But God, and today he is the God of this world. He is why all the problems we have in the world is Satan today. But God has got him on a short chain, and one of these days it's going to end and he'll be in the lake of fire. Right here for 1,000 years, Revelation 27 through 9, and Revelation 12, 7 through 10, it tells that Satan, that blue path up there, that's the path of Satan. All through space and time. We know that Satan influenced with his demon spirits, he influenced the snake in the garden. So we have a snake that's indwelled by a demon spirit and controlled and spoken through by Satan himself in the Garden of Eden. And he fools the woman there, Isha or Eve, okay? In the garden we see that. Now, demons seek to dwell in human or animal flesh, okay? Angels don't do that. Angels have form. We don't always see that form. They appear to us, but they are there. All the time. Let's go on now.
Well, what about the two that usher us in and out?
Oh, that's, we were talking about that a little earlier, Brother John. Right over here, of course, these are the cherubim that stand witness when we're born into this world, when we are conceived. There are two angels witnessing there that we are conceived. Okay? When we are saved, when we're born again, there are two angels that witness our salvation. And evidently, when we die, there are angels, according to Luke, the 16th chapter, the angels escorted Lazarus there. There are those two angels, at least, that escort us into the presence of God when we die. So they come and get us. Brother Brett.
And the Nephilim, is it a spirit?
No, that's not different stuff. A Nephilim is fallen ones. The Nephilim is probably a hybrid between humans and women and are fallen angels, okay? But we're not going to go on that subject right now. Okay, yeah. But that's physical beings, okay? A Nephilim is a physical being. A Nephilim was Goliath, was a Nephilim, okay? Og was a Nephilim. A lot of these people were Nephilim. Let's go on. Okay. All right. He brought these demons possessed and he cast the fallen spirits out of them. He cast the rebellious spirits out of these people, okay? And he healed all that were ill. And 17, in order that what was spoken through Isaiah the prophet saying fulfilled, say, he himself took our infirmities and carried away our diseases. And that is in Isaiah 53 and verse 4. Okay? Now Jesus, see, he's fulfilling prophecy here, okay? Number 18, now Jesus saw a great crowd around him, and he gave orders to depart on the other side. Let's look at the word crowd right there. What verse is that in? Crowd. Verse number 18. All right. And he saw an oaklone. So this is at least 5,000 right here. This is between 5 and 10,000. This isn't a gigantic, this isn't the great 20, 30,000, but there's at least 5,000 people here, okay? 5 to 10,000 in this crowd. That word is oklone, which is accusative singular, okay? Saw a great crowd, or a crowd around him, and gave orders to depart to the other side. Now there's at least 5 to 10,000. A certain scribe came to him saying, "Teacher, I will follow you wherever you go." Teacher. All right? He didn't quite address him correctly, did he? All right? Teacher, didaskalos. All right? The scribe, and he said to him, "Didaskale, teacher." He said, "Teacher." Now, by the way, all of the rabbis were teachers, weren't they? A rabbi was a doctor of theology. He was a master teacher. So what he calls him is rabbi or master teacher. He didn't say Jehovah here like the other guy did. All right, he says, "Master teacher, I will follow you wherever you go." And Jesus said to him, "The foxes have holes and the birds of the air have nests, but the Son of Man has nowhere to lay his head." And another of the disciples came to him. What is a disciple? What does that mean? That's mathetes in Greek. Mathetes means what? Habitual learner. Habitual learners, they had been coming, listening all the time. And he said to him, "Lord, permit me first to go bury my father." And Jesus said to him, a little bit sharp and a little bit short to him, wasn't he, Brother Bill? And Jesus said to him, follow me and allow the dead to bury their own." His family wasn't even sick yet. He was wanting to wait there until he got old and got sick, and he buried him. He took care of all the legal things, and then he was going to follow Jesus.
Could it be 30, 40, 50 years?
It could have been 10 years or 5 years, whatever. But forget it. He said, "Let the dead bury the dead." And when he got into the boat, disciples followed him, and behold, there arose a great storm. Now, all of this is in the Sea of Galilee, and all this is around Capernaum. This is where the greatest witness. There are 9 cities here with over 15,000 people there. Brother, Dr. John, could you read verse 24 for us? Matthew 8 and verse 24.
"And suddenly a great tempest arose on the sea, so that the boat was covered with the waves, but he was asleep. Then his disciples came to him and awoke him, saying, 'Lord, save us, we are perishing.' But he said to them, 'Why are you fearful, O you of little faith?' And he arose and rebuked the winds and the sea, and there was a great calm. So the men marveled, saying, 'Who can this be that even the winds and the sea obey him?'"
What is Jesus showing here? That he's the master of the universe. He's Jehovah that created the heavens and the earth. In Genesis 1 and 1 it says, "Barashit, bara, in beginnings, and one of the beginnings, created and finished and brought to a finished product, Elohim. Et ha-shemayim ve-et ha-aretz, the heavens and the earth." God created the heavens and the earth, all right? This is the one that created the heavens and the earth. This is the one that can calm. Who do you think calls the storm? Who do you think is going to try to mask everything that Jesus does? Who do you think is going to try to... Where are all these tornadoes and stuff come from? Who do you think the author of all that is today? You go back in the book of Job and figure it out.
Satan.
So Satan calls... Here's Jesus' disciples out here. He's seeing all this. So Satan stirs up a great tempest and storm out here on the Sea of Galilee. By the way, I want to tell you a little something about the Sea of Galilee for just a moment. The Sea of Galilee, now this isn't the truth, but the Sea of Galilee, the rabbis, the rabbinical teaching was that the Sea of Galilee was a gate of hell, was the doorway to hell, the bottomless pit. That, the Sea of Galilee, the bottom of the Sea of Galilee was a doorway to the bottomless pit or hell, Sheol. That's what they said. Because out there on the Sea of Galilee, it could be so calm and everything, all of a sudden, whoa, these gigantic storms would come up and they say hell is stirring itself. All right. I just want you to remember that for a minute. That isn't so. But I want you to see what Jesus is, how he's dealing with these Jews, okay? "And he had come to the other side into the country of the Gadarenes. Two men were demon-possessed, Now, in some places it said he was talking about one, but here it says there were two of them. Two of them in bad shape. These are bad guys. These are Goliath-type people. These are strong people. These are very powerful, demon-possessed people. And when people are demon-possessed, when people are on drugs, in the book of Revelation where it talks about those people that, I can't remember what it says in English. In Greek it says they are intoxicated with pharmakia. We get a word pharmacy from that. Okay? But when they are drug peddlers and drug pushers. Okay? These are drug addicts. And when people are on drugs, powerful, and when we went into the Philippines and started messing around over there in the Philippines, about, you know, in the late 1800s, early 1900s, we went over there, and those Filipinos would be absolutely filled with drugs, and they would come, and you couldn't stop them. And until that period of time, they were using, the military was using a pistol called a 38 Colt. 38 Colt. Well, a 38 Colt wouldn't stop them. So they had to invent a new caliber, which was a 45 ACP, what means 45 automatic Colt pistol round. 230 grain bullet. Very powerful to stop and to slow those people down. Out here on one of the roads where you come in, what's the first cutoff there where you have before you come to Olive Drive?
Patton.
No, not Patton. When you're coming in on 99 from Bakersfield? Seven Standard Road out there. Was another little road there after. What?
No road.
Well, anyway, this was a long time ago. That there wasn't anything to there. Anyway, a guy where it goes down like this and cuts off on the old 99 road there that used to be there before the freeway was. Of course, nobody's... What?
Golden State.
Golden State. Yeah, okay. Anyway, right there, a policeman stopped a man that was on drugs. He emptied a .357 Magnum into this guy coming at him. The guy took the pistol away from him and beat him half to death with the pistol after he shot him six times with .357 Magnum. That's a pretty powerful gun. So then they started using 45 ACPs. Because when people are on drugs, they're demon-possessed people. Drugs have demons in them. Okay? These demon-possessed men were met him, were coming out of the tombs, and they were so exceedingly violent that no one could pass by the road. Here, what we call, are the kings of the graveyard. The master of the graveyard. Okay? The master of the graveyard. They're living out there with the dead. And behold, they cried out saying, "What do we have to do with you, the Son of God?" Now, it's not the people crying out. These are the demons in them. All right. We find out in one of the other Gospels that the demon called himself Legion. He had a name. And there was at least 2,000 demons in these people. Okay, at least 2,000 demons in each one. It said that they had tied them with chains and manacles and handcuffs. And they just tore them off of themselves. They couldn't bind them with ropes or chains or anything. "Have you come here to torment us before our time?" They knew that they're going to get thrown into the lake of fire. Now, there are some demon spirits and angels that are so bad, they're loose, they're held into the bottomless pit right now, according to Jude and other places, and Peter. Let me go on, Brother Phil Mill. Hold on. "Have you come here to torment us for our time?" And there was a distance from them a herd of many fine swine feeding. Now remember I told you that demons like to dwell in human or animal flesh? Here we are. Pigs are pretty smart. That's one of the smartest animals on the earth, pigs are. One of the smartest quadrupeds on the earth. They're smarter than some people I know. I had one called Wilbur, remember? And the demons began, actually the demons kept on begging him, saying, "If you are going to cast us out, send us into the herd of swine. We want to go and dwell in human or animal flesh." Okay? And he said to them, "Be gone." And when they came out, they went into the swine, and behold, the whole herd rushed down deep into a bank into the Sea of Galilee, basically, and perished in the waters. Where was the Sea of Galilee? What was it supposed to be? The gateway to hell. The gateway to the bottomless pit. So anyway, and then what? And the Jews that are watching, who do you think owns these animals? Jews couldn't own a pig and eat it, could they? But they could own it and make money on it, sell it to a Roman. All right? These are Jewish swine handlers here, okay? And the herdsmen fled and went into the city and reported everything, including the incident, to the demoniacs. Now, all of this, these are Jews now. All of everything that happened around here that proved that Jesus is the Messiah. And someone read verse number 34 for me. Verse number 34. Bonnie, are you over there? Nope.
And behold, a whole city came out to meet Jesus. And when they saw him, they entreated him to depart from their region.
The Jewish people wouldn't have him. They won't have him today. Neither. They haven't changed their mind one little bit yet, has they? Well, God has got a place in his economy for them, but I'm going to tell you something. He's going to have to beat them up real good to get them to listen. Thank you for your attention. That's Brother Bill.
Yeah. So what these demons are saying, they knew when their time was coming.
They knew that their time was coming.
But
this wasn't really their time. Why are you going to do this before our time? They knew they were going to go to heaven.
So they're talking about when Jesus comes back.
Yeah. When Jesus comes back.
Good luck.
Well, there you are. Thank you for your attention. Brother David.